I'm Janie Reasoner, and welcome to Women's Voices. Another full show tonight. Today has been rather an epiphany for me, and I'm not sure even quite what that means. This morning I listened to Johanna Wild Oaks' wonderful show at 9 a.m. and found myself so moved by listening to a group of local, down-to-earth country women reading their poetry. They were old friends who had been meeting together for years. It was wonderful and comforting. Then I realized that, like bookends, there will be another group of country women tonight, right here. And I was filled with joy by the image of gatherings of women. Truly, my heart soared, as if I had come across some new treasure. The company of women who nourish and support each other and the greater good. Then came an email from Wings, Women's International News Gathering Service, announcing their recent broadcast, Landmine Survivors and Activists. For a few moments, I had forgotten the suffering ones. Co-directors Carmen Goodyear and Laura York, along with Marty Johnson and Amanda Gray, are here to tell us about Mendocino Coast Films' latest production, Women on the Land, Creating Conscious Community. The film highlights the work of women of this Northern California coastal community over the past 40 years and opens with archival footage of women who founded Country Women in the 1970s, the extremely successful feminist publication and how-to magazine for women's self-sufficiency. Featuring the work women in this community have done to care for the environment of our coastal land and sea over the years, along with their community activism. The film then follows the lives of women farming now and explains why the sustainable, organic, local food movement is essential in our current world of dwindling natural resources and economic decline. In celebration of International Women's Day, Mendocino Coast Films presents the premiere of this new documentary in two screenings, March 8th at 5:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Matheson Theater, 10700 Ford Street, just off Little Lake Street in the town of Mendocino. Make your reservations with Laura York at ttfarm@mcn.org.
Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place where my heart has always been, to laugh and run and play, free as a child, living life the way it's meant to be. Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place where my heart has always been. I thought I'd have to wait till my life's end to go to the country. Yes, the country, that's my home. Oh, I've been away too long from the country. I left over 30 years ago to live in city life and raise my children there. It wasn't quite the same for them as me. Oh, they miss the peace and quiet of the country, where life moves slowly through the days, and there is time to see the eyes of God in the country. Yes, the country, that's my home. Oh, we We all belong to the country that's been home for each and every one. Where natives walk this earth in silent skin-clad feet and bow to tall trees waving in the wind. Oh, we all belong to the country. That quiet place is somewhere in our hearts. And may we come to find that peace of mind in the country. Yes, the country, that's our home. Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place.
Laurie and Carmen, welcome to Women's Voices. Okay, could you do that again so we can hear you?
Thank you, Janie.
There. I didn't have you up. It's lovely to have you here. So my first question to you, Carmen, given that this is Women's Voices, how did your mother influence you to be the woman that you are today?
Well, I knew you were going to ask that, so I thought about it a little bit. My mother was a gardener, although I grew up in Saudi Arabia. They lived out there for 20 years, and so our garden was pretty minimal. But she loved plants, and she instilled that in me. She was also a 50s homemaker. She did all kinds of cooking and sewing and knitting, and she was an artist in the way that women of that generation were, and I feel like that influenced me also. And she was a very kind woman. She died young, so I found that out from other people that knew her as an adult. But I try to emulate that I know she was.
Could you say more about your early years and what brought you to Mendocino and farming?
After schooling, I was kind of footloose and was in the early hippie years, and my partner at the time and I ended up in Mendocino. This was when I was about 24 years old, and I was fortunate to be able to buy a piece of land in Albion. Not fortunate that it was because my parents had been killed in a car accident, but anyway, I did buy this land, and it's been my home ever since, because not just because the land is so beautiful here, but because of this community is so warm and nurturing. And so my early years have been here. I mean, they started here, and now I'm old.
Thank you. Laurie, I ask you the same question. What part did your mother play in your becoming the woman that you are today?
Well, gosh, Janie, that's really a question I've thought about. It's really a tricky question for me, because my mother had a brain tumor when I was 6 years old, and she had surgery and became an invalid. And she was an invalid from the time I was 6 until 13, and she died when I was 13. So my experience with my mother is mostly in the role of my helping to take care of my mother. But I know that in the years between 1 and 6, I had a very wonderful upbringing with an extremely loving mother. And people always talked about my mother as being a saint. They said she was beautiful, and she was also just the most loving person. So I know I got a lot from her in those early years. And also, you know, the years that we were together. But she did lose a lot of her speech and her capacity to walk. She couldn't walk. So, it was a little different for me.
I should say, my goodness. And here you are with with all that came out of that. Isn't that amazing?
Well, yeah, you just, you know, I mean, I had aunts, my mother's two sisters who were living close by, and so I got a lot from that part of the family. And, I feel really fortunate. I've always been surrounded by women my whole entire life, and I just love the company of women.
That's lovely. From there to here, what could you fill in some of those years?
From there to here on the coast, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I left Memphis, Tennessee, when I was 23 years old, and I moved to San Francisco. I took the big leap. My parents were gone at that point, and I just, I really, you know, wanted to see what else was out in the world. And so I took Green Tortoise tour bus across the country, and I ended up in San Francisco, and my whole entire life changed forever. And I spent 7 years in the city, and I, you know, became an artist while I was living in the city. And then my partner and I at the time wanted to leave the city. After 7 years there, I had had enough, and I really felt like I wanted to live in a more rural area. So we left and moved up to Albion, and Albion has been my home ever since, and I can't imagine living anywhere else.
What a wonderful thing to say. So when you two met, you were plein air painters.
Carmen and I?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how we met. We were both in a group called, what was it called?
Thursday Swimming,
right. And so, yeah, we knew each other as painters. And, you know, we went out painting and did some plein air painting together and, you know, got to know each other better as artists and just as friends.
Hmm. And so when and how did you turn into filmmakers with the award-winning documentary Freedom to Marry?
Carmen, do you want to talk about that?
Well, it was about 2000 or something like that. We got a small laptop computer, and on the computer was a program called iMovie, and we would just had fun around the farm making little films about our puppies and our hummingbirds and, you know, just the things like that, and learning how to work the whole system. Around 2004, we had some friends who were having a commitment ceremony. They'd been together for 20 years, these two women, and instead of ever being able to have a wedding and a legitimate marriage, they had a commitment ceremony, and we filmed that for them. But we realized that it was, you know, unfair that they couldn't have the 1,134 rights,
38
federal rights, or that go along with marriage. And then when Gavin Newsom said that people could get married in San Francisco, we just grabbed our cameras. That was in February 13th, 2004. We just drove down there. We got married, and we filmed, and we made our film.
Yeah, it was really an extraordinary time, not just to get married, but just to be among those loving couples and to have to be a part of history in the making, you know, to know that that we were the first part of the first 4,000 same-sex couples to be able to marry in the United States. It was remarkable.
Mm, I can imagine. And your film has been shown on PBS and a lot of other places.
Yeah, it really, the little film that took off and never stopped, it's still going. It's internationally, it's done extremely well, too. It's been all over this country and in film festivals and on television stations. It aired nationally on PBS. And then in film festivals, it's shown in festivals around the world, and now it's been picked up on television stations internationally and translated to four languages, Spanish, French, Dutch, and Chinese. So it did have an interest to people other than those here in the Bay Area and the coast of the West Coast.
I am sure. I'm sure it's been loved every place. We have two other women with us, Marty Johnson. Hello, Marty.
Hello. Hello.
And Amanda Gray.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Women's Voices. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you, Lori and Carmen, what inspired you to make the film Women on the Land, Creating Conscious Community?
Well, you know, films kind of evolve, and this film had a very interesting evolution, which Lori and I were sitting around one night, and we were thinking of all the incredible people that have kind of characters, you might say, who've done amazing things on the coast, and we were writing them down, thinking, wouldn't it be fun to interview them, and people who've, you know, helped save different parts of our environment. And the film started out being called The Power of Protest. We interviewed Els Cooper-Ryder and Doug Moselle about their work around the stopping the GMOs. And
Linda Perkins and Bill Heil.
Right. And so it was kind of going in that direction. And then one day I was in the barn and I found an old box of Super 8 film reels that I kind of knew were there, but I hadn't looked at them in 30 years, and I thought they were disintegrated. And when I opened them up, they were fine. And on those reels were all this footage of country women, women from the magazine and women who had been working on the farm in those days, a lot of us who are still here, and what we looked like 40 years ago, sorry, is pretty amazing. So I thought, now this is something to build a film around.
So let's see, where do I go from there? So, you know, we had had that footage transferred digitally, and we had a chance to, you know, look at it, and it was really classic footage. I mean, it's amazing to see these women, you know, in their 20s, and, you know, I mean, Carmen, you know, had this long black hair, and she was sleek and just gorgeous and still gorgeous, but, you know, just 40 years later, just that what time does and how we change and grow. And so we have a number of women in the film that we interviewed. We have archival footage of them as well.
Mm, that's wonderful. Well, Marty and Amanda, how did you get on the land and become farmers and have animals, and whoever would like to go first?
Well, I consider myself a geriatric 4-H'er. I know lots of the original people who were country women, and I moved here in 1984 and commuted for 5 years between Berkeley and Casper as I was setting up my private psychotherapy practice up here on the coast. I was a potter. I was not growing food. I was involved with my practice, with my partner, taking care of the land, but not necessarily seeing what it was to become. My partner died of ovarian cancer in the year 2000, and about 2 years later, I was working with a group of social activists where we were asked, what were we going to commit our life to? And I was thinking about the third chapter of my life, and the statement I made at that point is, I want to change the diet of America. Not realizing that to change the diet of America, you come home to local foods. So I was active in a group called Cell, where we had the month of October where you were eating within 100 miles, try to eat most of your food that was grown within 100 miles. Then I progressed to thinking, well, I ought to try chickens first. So I started raising chickens. And then I had a friend who's challenged, said, let's see if we can raise meat birds, because I am an omnivore, and learn to see if we can butcher, which we did learn. Then I began to think about milk, cheese, meat. And so I asked Carmen if I could come once a week to see if I could learn to milk a goat. And that led to my getting my first wonderful goat from Guy and Lucy Kingsley, and building a barn, and then adding another goat, and then having baby goats, and then deciding, you know, I like lamb too. So getting bummer lambs donated to me that I'd raised for meat. And so slowly I came into this wonderful way of life, which, you know, I love the fact that every morning the first thing I get to do is go out in the barn, whether it's milking or just being with the animals, which sets a whole different meditative pace for my life.
Of course.
And why one of my purposes is, after 9/11, I began to see we were being pumped full of fear in this country. And I wanted to think, what's an antidote to fear? And so I realized that if you can are empowered to grow your food, to process your food so it's there in the winter, you will feel safer for your family, your neighbors, and your friends. And so everything I learned to do, I learned so I could teach someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's lovely. That's lovely. I want to interrupt and say, I think it's 7:24, you're listening to Women's Voices. I'm Janie Reasoner. I'm here with Laurie York and Carmen Goodyear, co-producers of the film Women on the Land, Creating Conscious Community. And with us also are Marty Johnson and Amanda Gray. Amanda, what would you like to say about how you came to be on the land and growing food and animals?
Well, I guess I'd have to say I've never been off it. I grew up in the country. I grew up at the end of a dirt road, and I live at the end of a dirt road now. and I grew up in Humboldt County, and I grew up with chickens and a horse, and you know, the usual dogs and things like that. And just everybody I knew, we all had animals. Everybody had animals, and that's what you did. I was never really involved in 4-H or anything because everybody had animals, and who needed to join a club to have animals? So, but it was just something that we always did. And my father grew most of what we ate, and my mother preserved it, canned it, froze it, and I learned how to do that. And I just always have. When my family and I moved down here 6 years ago, I had always wanted to raise goats for some reason. And goats are a little bit like potato chips. I got my first goat from Carmen, and you can't have just one. So now I have, as of last Wednesday, I have 9 because one of my does just had triplets. And I'm waiting, actually watching the clock, because I have another doe that's due to kid any minute. And she may or may not have 3. She may only have 2. Who knows? But that'll be, you know, it's... Goats are kind of like Christmas around this time of year. You never know what kind of present you're going to get. But I have always been involved in the rural aspect of life. I don't consider myself to be anything but rural, and I couldn't imagine living any other way.
Mm, that's lovely. And you have children?
I have one son. Yes, he's 16.
Uh huh. So he's enjoyed the farm life all of his life.
Well, you'd have to ask him if he's enjoyed it. He's
experienced it.
He's experienced it.
Right. He will enjoy it someday if he doesn't now.
He's actually we laugh about the fact that the reason we don't have television in our house is because we have goat TV. And because what, like Marty was saying, you know, when you go out in the barn, it's just a totally different time frame. And you know, there's really nothing... that I will swear that there's nothing in this life cuter than a 4-day-old Nubian goat. And so just, you know, to go out and be there at the birth and be there when they figure out how to stand on all 4 feet and which foot comes first when they're walking. And when they finally do figure that out and they go, hey, I'm really cool. Check me out. And then you can just go watch them. And, you know, and they get crafty as they get older. We have a doe that is really, really good at making you think she's doing one thing when in fact what she's really doing is stealing the cheese and crackers off the plate. And it's a relaxing time that goes deeper than just relaxation. It's a communing kind of a thing.
Yeah, it is. I know. You know, as a child, I grew up on a farm, and I remember going out to the barn and sitting on bales of hay and watching the kittens play. And mm-hmm. There's nothing more fun than watching kittens chase each other, and they're just delightful. I saw a little video not too long ago of baby goats. There was a number of them. I think they were maybe black and white.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Anyway, jumping around from stump to stump, it was the most adorable thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, those are Nigerian dwarfs. They are really cute.
And the way they kick up their heels, they're just wonderful.
Yeah, they are.
Everybody should spend their time looking at goats or kittens. Life on Earth would be utterly changed. Well, Country Women's Magazine. Carmen, you want to talk to me about it?
Well, it was about in the probably about 1970, a group of women got together in Albion. Consciousness raising was just something that was being explored by women in cities, and we found some books or whatever articles that told us how to do it, which was basically just getting together, meeting once a week, and speaking about things that had happened to us as growing up as girl children, and how our lives were going along now as women. These were things that nobody had noticed in the 50s, and it was fun, it was loving, it was excruciatingly painful at times. And anyway, after we talked for about a year, we decided we wanted to do something. So the first thing we did was start a weaving co-op, and we did spinning and weaving and had lunch together and stuff.
Excuse me, did you have goats at this time?
Yes.
That's why you were weaving the...
Yes, and we had our own sheep to shear and spin. Uh-huh. And so then somebody had the idea of starting a magazine, and there was a couple of women who felt they could write, and some illustrators and some photographers, and we just put together a few pages, mimeograph pages, but the focus was always half and half, one half of consciousness-raising articles about different stages of life and different groups of women and things that we wanted to learn, and then the other was about skills, country skills. And the magazine just kept growing and growing. I think it was published for about 10 years, and it was pretty soon a national periodical. Mm. People were writing in from all over the country. And
exciting.
We had a huge subscription list, and I can't remember what the final amount that was printed each month, or it wasn't even each month, maybe bi-monthly. And then after the magazine stopped, there was a book that was published, Country Women Book. And that went really far and wide, published by Doubleday, and...
So were your stories featured in that book? Is that what that book was about? About you all?
Yes. It was some articles that had been in the magazine, kind of other things added to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must have been exciting.
Yeah, you were
on the map. Well, didn't you say that at one point they had a publication number larger than Ms. Magazine? Is that what you said?
Well, that's kind of it's truth, but it's a little bit of a myth, because Ms. Magazine started while we were publishing, and so the first couple of issues of Ms. were small because they just started, and then we were in full swing.
Right. Well, and now you're here with this documentary, and you're about to air it. I mean, we all get to see it. There's a trailer out right now, except it's not out exactly, right?
No, the trailer, we finished the trailer. We finished the movie, and we finished the trailer. And we're now working on a Kickstarter campaign so that we can raise some funds for post-production expenses, things like a website for the film. We need to raise some money so that we can submit the film to film festivals around the country. We need to create closed captioning so that the film can air on PBS stations and other television stations with closed captioning. Mm-hmm. And there's some post-production editing that needs to be done for broadcast TV.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're thinking is that in just hopefully tomorrow, maybe the next day, we will have the Kickstarter site up and running. And at that point, we will send out an announcement on the listserv and you know, let our friends and everyone know. And also, I wanted to say that if anyone is interested in helping to support this film, we'd love to be able to tell you when the Kickstarter site is up and running. And if you'd like to send an email to us at ttfarm, that's TTFARM at mcn.org, then we'd be happy to let you know when the Kickstarter site is up. And you'll also, on Kickstarter, be able to see the trailer of the film.
Mm, lovely. Well, we'll come back to that again and again. Conscious community. Marty and Amanda, what does that mean to you, conscious community?
That's a good question. For me, a conscious community, one of the stories that I love is the story of Stone Soup, which is about someone coming into town and seeing everyone isolated in their own households. And by getting a cauldron set up in the middle of the town square and a magic stone, he has each family bring whatever vegetable they have, and they put it into a soup, and then they share it, and they become community again. And I, part of what I am think is so important is to find ways that we connect with each other and support each other as community, because together we survive, divided we don't. And food is one of the great organizing factors that brings people together. Yeah. It brings people together in celebration. It brings people together as they work on a piece of land, like at John Richardson's Noyo Hill Farm, where I have volunteered, and it's just a wonderful place to learn about farming. It brings people together in organizations like The Grange, which I'm master of The Grange, and The Grange originally came together to bring small farmers together in community to withstand the pressures of the railroad barons in 1873. Wow. And since in the last 7 years in California, with all the new interest in sustainability, local foods, Granges across the state of California are being revitalized as people want to come back to that original mission. Mm-hmm. So that's another way of conscious community. Mm-hmm. But I think the more we are conscious of what we can do for ourselves to provide for our community, the stronger our community is.
Yeah. How do people find out about what's happening at the Grange?
You go to the website, which is the Fort Bragg Grange, .org.
So because I don't think I see announcements. I get Willett's News, and they have a very active Grange there, and I do see their announcements. I'm not aware of seeing many announcements of things happening here. Is that?
Well, then you've missed the Advocate, because there is a monthly canning class, 7 months of a year. There are cooking classes. There's a winemaking class. There's a wonderful workshop that's going to be this Wednesday about making alcohol to use as fuel. The Grange originally, from 1915 until Prohibition, was working actively to find ways to turn, like, potatoes into alcohol that could be used for fuel. And Prohibition was supported by Standard Oil and Mr. Ford. So that was disrupted until petroleum became our main product. Yeah. So we are going to be talking on Wednesday at 7 o'clock at Inglenook, 6 miles north of Fort Bragg, about how do we locally start finding ways to make alcohol so we have fuel for our tractors, for those kinds of things that we need so that we can support feeding ourselves.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you. Amanda, how do you see conscious community?
Well, for me, a conscious community, I really feel like I moved into one when we moved down here. One of the things I remember saying to my husband was that it really felt good to be in a place where there were so many strong women. And that's one of the things that has always really struck me about the Mendocino Coast area is there is a real sense of empowerment and a sense of consciousness among the women here. And I would say that for me, the idea of conscious community is one wherein we are thinking beyond our immediate selves and looking at the larger context. The bumper sticker says, think globally, act locally. And I guess that's what I see happening here, is that there's a questioning about, well, if I buy this, where does it come from? And can I get it from someone who makes it here? And thereby support a local business, or support a local artisan, or support a local farmer, and as a local farmer, I'm very partial to that attitude, but I try to practice it as much as anybody else, as much as I possibly can, and so to me, it's conscious community is about recognizing that we're all parts of the same organism, and it's very, very important for us to, if we're going to survive as a community, to think of each other, and not think about, well, I can get it cheaper somewhere else, but to think about how does my money, if it's money that I'm spending, how is it staying in the community? How is it helping to keep my friends and neighbors alive? How is what I'm contributing to this community helping to sustain it as a whole? And not just thinking about, well, you know, I want to buy this, so I'm going to go online and get it from a catalog. It's about taking the time to look around and see who's doing it locally, whatever it is, you know, and making that connection, because when you take the time to talk to the local people and talk to local artisans, local farmers, local producers of anything, then you find out what you have in common. And once you start to find out those things, then you realize that we're a lot more alike than we are different. And then we can really start to appreciate each other. A conscious community is one that celebrates the distinctions between us, but also celebrates what we have in common, what brings us together.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's beautiful. I want to say again, this is KZYX. You're listening to Women's Voices. I'm Janie Reisner. I'm here with producers and directors Carmen Goodyear and Laura York, speaking about their film, new film, Women on the Land, Creating Conscious Community, as well as Marty Johnson and Amanda Gray, who are both in that film. Did you want to say something, Laurie?
Yeah, thanks, Jenny. I wanted to add that, you know, our film talks about women's relationship to the land and protecting the land, which is something that women and men have done really well here for so many years, and it's part of why we love this place so much and why it's so special and so unique. There have been people protecting this land for a long, long time. And in our film, we address, we talk about in the last 40 years, women have been key players in stopping amazing things such as offshore drilling. Men and women both have done this. We stopped nuclear submarines from being dumped in our ocean right out.
This is amazing. I didn't even know that.
Yes, and this is in the film. We talk about how Carmen actually and some others were a part of stopping a nuclear power plant from being built on the earthquake fault in Point Arena. Now, this was going to happen, and it was in the early 70s that this was proposed. And they were able to stop that. We've stopped GMO crops. We've stopped roadside herbicide spraying. We've stopped the stealing of fresh water from our rivers and streams. And not to mention we've stopped the clear cutting of our old growth redwood trees. There's so many things that this community has come together to prove our love for this area and to protect this place. Mm. And that was one big focus of our film. We wanted to really honor those activists because were it not for them, this place would be quite different.
Mm. It would be. It would be. And I think you mentioned, one of you, about really this being a teaching tool, because those who come after you will also need to stop what's going on. Of course, we're all needing to stop a lot of other things that are going on right now, too. And we need to continue to preserve those skills.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, so many of the activists here are getting older now, and we really have a lot of wisdom and a lot of nuts and bolts knowledge on how to combat bureaucracy. And so, we're hoping that the film will inspire younger people to learn from the elders and to really take on the cause of protecting this place after we're gone.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay, the film is entitled Women on the Land. I'm going to ask this question, what about the men?
We have actually been asked that, because there's a part in the film when I'm talking about being on the farm in the early 70s, where we felt like back in those days, especially after the consciousness raising meetings and all, that we wanted to learn how to do all the skills that were traditionally done by men, and we found that when men were living there, that they often just took over those skills, or we let them, or whatever. The dynamic was that we had a separate set of things going on. And so we decided to say that it was going to be women's land only. And by doing that, then we were allowing ourselves to learn all these things and to be empowered in a way that I don't think we would have otherwise. Since that time, in this community, there's been men's consciousness raising groups, and I feel like men have also gone through some evolution of about learning about gender roles and, you know, taking on maybe some more womanly aspects of life. And I think now, you know, certainly in the part of the film that's about activists, that we see an equality there where, you know, women have taken leadership roles in some of these battles, but we're doing these things together now.
That's nice. Do either of you want to add anything, Marty or Amanda?
I also think what I bring to the film is also reminding everyone you can start at any time. I started raising goats at 63. And it has been the best thing in terms health-wise, in terms of getting strength. But I probably move at a slower pace than someone who's 20, but I get everything done. And so what I want to remind, it's never too late to raise chickens or to can or to raise goats. And there's such a fabulous feedback loop between raising your own animals and getting the milk and making cheese and making yogurt and having eggs. And sitting out there in the morning and evening and just communing with the animals. It has, I mean, I feel like every day I wake up filled with joy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And for me, it's really, you know, as the mother of a son, he gets to see me doing things that, well, I mean, he's always gotten to see me doing things that I never got to see my mother do. Like, you know, he and I work together to clean the barn. We work together to slaughter the chickens. We work together to butcher the goats. You know, all of the stuff that he and I work together to pound in the T-post to make the new fence. You know, it's me running the chainsaw or it's him running the chainsaw, but it's not a question of he's the guy with, you know, he's taller than I am now because he's 16, but it's not a question of he's the guy and he has the muscles, therefore he runs the chainsaw. He gets to see me doing things as a real person. And I think that's a gift that I can give him as a woman to be able to say, you know, I'm a person, and therefore the choices that you make in your adult life for partners, you'll be able to see people, not objects, not symbols, not some media image. You'll be able to relate to my gender as people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. I think that it's something that he's definitely internalized. And I'm grateful to have been able to give him that opportunity in such a joyful way. I agree with you, Marty, that it's a really joyful experience to be able to do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Do you all raise chickens? And do you all have goats?
Yes.
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 And we have one pet lamb, and I have pet sheep. How old is Curly?
Curly is about 12 years old now, still munching on the grass.
And I raise lamb.
Yeah, when you bottle raise a sheep, they become bonded with you in a big way, and Curly's like a big dog, really. He just follows us around. We walk on the trail around in the forest, and he follows us through the forest, and it's really sweet.
Yeah, the difference is that they walk on the trails, and Curly makes his own trail. He's the biggest sheep I've ever seen.
Has he fathered any goats? Is that?
Oh, he was neutered when he was young because it makes them better pets. They're not as, you know, not as hostile or whatever. But yeah, he's just our big boy. We love him so much. And how old is he, Carmen? 12 years old. Wow.
And so you intended him to be a pet. That's what.
Oh yeah, I went over to the Hopland Field Station and I adopted two little sheep lambs, and the female didn't make it, but Curly made it, and they call me every year. Do you want to adopt some more? We've got a bunch of bummers. So if anybody wants bummer lambs, call the Hopland Field Station in January.
What is that word, bummer?
Bummer, it means that the mother rejected them for some reason, and so they have to be bottle raised.
Oh.
It's really fun to bottle raise them, and they just love you for it.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. You know, I got to do that. I have pictures of me feeding the lamb a bottle, you know, way back then on the farm in Illinois, and raising chickens and watching my mother wring their necks, which she hated doing, you know, and isn't that awful? You know, pluck them and do the whole thing and do all of it. She raised chickens. She must have sold them. I don't know how she sold them because she got a lot of them, 200 at a time.
But Janie, it's a far better life than factory farming. You know?
For the chicken, even though it gets of course it is. Oh, of course it is.
They have a real life.
They
get to walk around and eat bugs.
Then get in our yard and we chase them out.
That's the first thing that people say to me, actually, is how can you stand to kill an animal you've raised?
I know.
And I say, well, you know, I would much rather know what kind of a life the animal had. I know when it's born in my barn, I know that it's had a really good life. I've given it all kinds of attention. I've given it, you know, the best possible feed. I've given it everything that I can possibly give it, and then it has one bad minute, and then it's over. And I would much rather have that experience, even though it is very difficult, than buy something where I don't know where it came from, but I do know that the animal had a terrible, awful life.
That's right.
And one of the things that always gets said to me, and it's something I kind of wait for anymore, is, oh, if I had to know where my food came from, I'd be vegetarian. And my response is, well, consider then becoming vegetarian, because by your deliberate ignorance, you're fostering a system that is one of the cruelest on earth.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, our time is 7:51. Lori, can you talk some more about Kickstarter and the event and what time we should be there? Either one of you can get up to the mic.
Yes, well, I just wanted to mention that we're having a screening of Women on the Land, two screenings actually, on International Women's Day, which is this year on Thursday, March 8th. We're having a screening at the Matheson Theater in the town of Mendocino. It's near the high school. I forgot to bring the address. Maybe
it's 10700, but it's right next to the high school.
And so our first screening is at 5:30, and then following that, we have a second screening at 7:30. And our second screening is almost sold out. We're real excited about that. We're going to have almost all the women featured in the film will be at the 7:30 screening.
Mm.
So that's going to be really fun, and we're going to have a Q&A afterward.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, and so if you want tickets, we do advise that you reserve your tickets, and you can do that by emailing us at ttfarm, that's ttfarm, at mcn.org. And then in terms of Kickstarter, which I mentioned earlier, we're going to have up and running either tomorrow or the next day. If you would like to help contribute to getting this film out into the world, we would really appreciate it. And Kickstarter is so wonderful because you don't have to contribute very much money. It works because a lot of people give a little bit of money. You know, $5, $10, whatever, and it all adds up, and it will make it possible for us to put this film out on television and you know, and ideally we want this film to go into schools, colleges, universities, and libraries. So we would really appreciate your help. And if you want to know more about when that Kickstarter site is up and running, you can also email us at ttfarm@mcn.org.
Thank you. What about people who don't have email?
Well, you can give us a call at 707-937-2880.
Okay, you want to do that again slowly?
Yes, 707-937-2880.
Really, this screening is the only time one would get to see the documentary in a theater. Is that correct?
Yes, for now.
For now.
Yeah, for now. And then after that, the film will begin to go into film festivals, and so it won't be available for a while after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that exciting? You'll get to go to different film festivals with your film.
No, you know,
we have a farm.
Yeah, when well, you're a right. farmer, you just don't travel too much. But we're going to send the people in the film out to the film festivals if they'd like to go and uh-huh. travel with the film.
Oh, how wonderful!
And so several of them have said that they'd love to do that.
That sounds like fun. Very much fun.
Oh yeah, it's great fun. They treat you royally. They put you in a great hotel and they pick you up at the airport and they feed you and they yeah, it's great.
Gee, I wish I was had been in it. I didn't come here soon enough. Well, here's the final question. What do you see as the future for Mendocino County in terms of conscious community?
Well, having lived here since 1984, I really see us evolving, especially around the food culture. I see young people working with John Richardson to learn how to farm. We have this wonderful learning garden up at the Fort Bragg High School. We have gardens at every school in Fort Bragg where kids are learning about growing food. There's an active 4-H program. I feel that in the last 8 years, there's been a blossoming happening in this community around food and sharing skills and passing on knowledge from one generation to another. So it has been it's a very vibrant, exciting time. And I think it gets us prepared for whatever shocks we have coming to the system, to our food system in this country in terms of oil availability. I think we have a very strong food network that is very vital and alive.
Mm, thank you. That sounds wonderful. I was just going to say, in the film, Susan Lightfoot from Noyo Food Forest is in it.
Yes, she speaks quite beautifully about all these issues and was one of the founders of the Noyo Food Forest. She's now living over in Ukiah doing some different kind of work between farms and schools.
Great. Okay, more on what lies ahead in terms of conscious community. Who else wants to address that?
Oh, boy, Jenny, let's see. In terms of conscious community in the future,
yeah,
you know, I really look forward to seeing the young people participating more and more in growing food. And like, you know, Marty mentioned with Noyo Food Forest is such an amazing example of what can be done. I mean, they're growing food for the high school in Fort Bragg. I think several of the schools, they're growing, you know, fresh produce. They also do the farmer's market. It's an incredible organization, and we do feature the Noyo Food Forest in the film, and we follow them around. You get to see what goes on behind the scenes of Noyo Food Forest. It's a lot of fun. But they've just set an amazing example of what young people can do here on the coast, and yeah, I'm just so proud of them.
One of the important things to have happen that I see in the next 2 to 5 years is matching elders with land with young farmers so that the land is used to grow food. The elders are supporting the younger generation in developing the farming skills, but also in growing food for our community. I think that's one of the big ways as conscious community that I look forward to seeing happening on the coast.
It's lovely.
And one of the things I think is important for us as a community and that I see happening certainly with us as a community is taking ownership of our own food in terms of not being satisfied with accepting what the FDA says is okay or what the USDA says is okay. You know, we want to know what's in it, okay, and we want to know where it came from.
Thank you. I'm going to have to close you down because we're running out of time. It's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much, all of you.
Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place where my heart has always been. To laugh and run and play, free as a child, living life the way it's meant to be. Oh, I'm on my way back to the country, the place where my heart has always been. I thought I'd have to wait till my life's end to go to the country.